Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America is speeding into a future with a lot more older drivers. You may have noticed it already. How to keep them mobile, their lives fulfilling, and the roads safe is a hot issue. Seniors have their needs and rights, so does the whole society. It can be a tough issue in state houses and at the family's kitchen table. This hour on Point, driving and older Americans. Joining me first today from Washington is Deborah Hersman, chair of the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. Last week, the NTSB convened its first ever public forum on the issue of aging drivers. Deborah Hersman, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be with you today.
Why this issue? Why now, Chair Hersman?
Well, you know, I think the really important thing for all of us to recognize is that we're all getting older, but the statistics are showing us that for us in the United States, that by 2025, in just 15 years from now, one in every five drivers on our roadway is going to be over the age of 65. We are not really good at assessing people's driving abilities, and we really need to have better coordination between the medical community, the licensing community, and also individual drivers. I think the most important takeaway is there is no magic age at which individuals should stop driving. It is very individualistic, and it needs to be assessed in consultation with an individual driver and their doctor and their family and also the licensing agencies.
I've been reading a lot on this, and I'm not sure to the answer to this question. Is it a problem overall for a country to have a lot more older drivers on the roads? Is that a problem?
Well, you know, I think that there's probably a lot of people that have preconceived notions about older drivers and their abilities, but I think the things that we learned in our forum last week was that older drivers are our most experienced drivers, and they're very safe drivers. They tend to buckle up. They don't drive after they've been drinking. They don't speed. They also are very good at self-selecting areas where they might be uncomfortable driving. And we see that older drivers are safe, but they also tend to be more frail or more fragile. And if they're involved in an accident, they are much more likely to be seriously injured or die. So an accident that you or I might walk away from with some injuries, an older driver might be hospitalized with serious injuries and may ultimately die from those injuries. And so we need to make crashes more survivable for older drivers.
And what about the public menace headlines that we see and have seen for years? You know, the older driver plowing into the schoolyard or through the, you know, through the windows at Walmart, or, you know, and people say, "Oh, good Lord, who's keeping tabs of this?" Is that just the rare and scary incident, or is there a, you know, public safety problem here?
Well, I think that older driver events do tend to probably capture more public attention, and we do see accidents that involve things like pedal misapplication that involve younger drivers, too, but we see often some catastrophic events that involve older drivers. One of the things that we do know is that as we age, there are some age-related conditions, medical conditions, and also other things that slow down as we age, whether it's our response time or other things. And so for older drivers, we want to make sure that they have plenty of information, good feedback. They have plenty of advance notice of things, good signage. But, you know, all of those things really help all drivers. But there is an area where I do think that we need to be focused and paying a little bit more attention, and that has to do with older drivers that have dementia. Because our panelists really talked about this as being a primary concern, because these drivers have some severe challenges, and they have some cognitive limitations, and that needs to be addressed, and that needs to be addressed in a comprehensive way. Trying to limit a driver with dementia to, say, operating between 12 and 2 is like telling a drunk driver that they can operate between 12 and 2. We would never do that. And so if somebody is not in the condition to be safe behind the wheel, we need to address that as well.
And Chairman Hurstman, finally, what about testing around the country? You know, there are different laws in different states, but are we testing adequately so that old people themselves are given feedback on their capacity for driving at a certain age? Well, I don't know whether it's 75 or 85 or 90, any age. Do we have the proper testing regime in this country?
Well, I think that's an area that really could benefit from some best practices and some good data and information. We have a patchwork system across the country. In the U.S., some states require in-person renewals. Some states require vision tests after a certain age. And even yet, other states may require over-the-road tests or driving tests, behind-the-wheel tests. And so we are very interested in trying to figure out what might be the best way to approach this in a fair and reasonable way, and that's supported by the data. And we are looking at some of those states that have done some innovative things. We are looking at states like Iowa, who actually have done more advanced road testing and putting on some restrictions as drivers age. And part of this is to allow drivers to continue potentially driving longer, just limit the areas and limit their risk exposure.
Let me get you on the record. Do you think, as chairman of the NTSB, should we have required road tests for American drivers over a certain age regularly or not?
You know, I don't think that we have a good sense of whether or not that that's appropriate. I think there are a lot of drivers on the roadways, younger drivers as well as older drivers, that might benefit from a road test, but I don't think it's something that should only be applied to older drivers at a certain age. And I don't think everybody's agreed upon what the right age for that is. But I think that we need to get better with our screening tools and also our assessment of individual ability. Once we get into a position where we actually have tools that work, then I think we need to consider some widespread application. But I think the jury's still out about whether or not those screening and assessment tools are accurate enough to widespread deploy them across the country.
Clearly, the demographics alone are going to make this a bigger and bigger issue. Deborah Hurstman is chair of the National Transportation Safety Board, joining us from Washington. Chairman Hurstman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, and thank you for exploring this very important issue. I think it'll engender a lot of conversations, hopefully around the family dinner table.
Yes, we hope so. Deborah Hurstman of the NTSB. Joining me now in the studio is Joseph Coughlin, director of the Age Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. He was a panelist at the NTSB Forum last week. Joe Coughlin, welcome to
Great to be here. Thank you.
So what's the big picture here? You know that a lot of people mutter in their cars, you know, oh. On the other hand, we're all going to be older drivers one day, and if you don't have the freedom to drive, it's hard to get around in this country. So when you look out on this aging population of drivers, what do you see?
I think Chair Hurstman captured it pretty well in terms of our understanding that, frankly, we don't know what an older driver is. Usually an older driver is anyone who's 15 years older than you are. But to your point, driving in America is not about getting from point A to point B. That really is not what it is. Driving fundamentally is about the glue that holds big and little things that we call life together. In fact, when you talk to drivers of any age, from 16 to 60, driving is about independence and freedom.
Walk us through the numbers then. What is the safety record here? Because I'm reading all kinds of things. Some things that say, well, first of all, the big observation, it's not age, it's health.
Right.
That is put out again and again. But then you can look at statistics overall. Here's the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration says by age 85, the crash rates are 9 times as high as those for drivers 25 to 69. That doesn't sound so great. So is there a kind of an age breakpoint overall that should have our attention focused on safety on the roads?
Disease, unfortunately, does not choose based upon birthdays. And birthdays do not kill. Health conditions do. So as we look at those numbers, whether they're 85 or any other age, what we have to look at is what's the correlation with other things going on. Chair Hurstman made a very good point that the sleeping giant out there is dementia and Alzheimer's related activities. So what this really means is that the screening tools that we need are not just those things that are going to be at the registry or the DMV, but attentive families, friends, people who sit in the seat next to you, physicians.
How good is that screen now?
The screen that we have out there formally today is a product of sloppy policymaking and unclear research. The best screen is the person sitting next to you and a family member who sees you driving on a regular basis.
But that doesn't sound like a very confident description of our screen now to keep people who shouldn't be driving off the roads.
But that does not have any age bias to it, because we also know that throughout our lifespan, as well as younger people, we have a safety problem regardless. So it's really watching who is driving and how well they are driving. Now, if you look at the younger population, the 16 to 25,
yep,
that's demonstrated evidence that octane, testosterone, and alcohol don't mix.
Recklessness of youth.
Recklessness of youth. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that as the population is aging, that's less an issue, that the population is less healthy than it used to be. Even the middle-aged folks with diabetes and allergies and the like, we now, I think, have to start thinking about safety through a lifespan and looking at health across the lifespan for driving.
I mean, I'm seeing some measures here saying older drivers can actually be better. They've got many years of experience. They know what to anticipate. They don't drive it when the weather's lousy.
Without question, older drivers are the best drivers on the road, I would submit, because they have the judgment, they have the experience, and unlike the middle-aged folks who don't have the choice, they know when they say, you know something, I can't make the trip because I'm not comfortable, nor maybe am I necessarily confident.
But they may not know when to give it up, and they have those skills, of course, until they don't. I mean, we all decline.
But that's where the family member and the friends and physicians need to come together with proper screening tools that have yet to be developed to identify driver at any age as to what is appropriate time to give up the keys.
We'll hear voices from around the country in this hour. We're joined right now from Canton, Massachusetts, by Massachusetts State Senator Brian Joyce, serving his seventh term. He's been pushing for safe driving measures for elderly drivers. Brian Joyce, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
There's a patchwork, as we just heard from the chair of the NTSB, a patchwork right across this country. We had some tough incidents in this neck of the woods not so long ago. You were pushing for a road test every 5 years as a condition for license renewal for drivers over 85. Did that get passed?
Well, a watered-down version got passed, and it's funny, when I made the proposal, I never anticipated that it would create the storm of opposition that it did create, and I guess I hadn't thought it through because, you know, folks really are concerned about losing their independence, and we in the political arena are concerned about offending elderly drivers, but the reality is society is facing, as you point out, an aging population, and for the first time, an aging driving population, and it raises a whole host of issues and safety for the seniors and for the rest of us on the road.
So what about road testing? What's the pushback against that? Road testing for drivers over 85, what did you run into for opposition there?
Well, the current law in this state was that a person takes a driver's license examination at 16 and a half and then never again for the rest of their lives. Every other time, the renewals are 5 years, so every other time, every 10th year, a person would have to pass a vision test where they'd simply have to discern the difference between red, yellow, and green. And there was no testing of any cognitive skills or any physical skills, and I just thought that was crazy. So a person who was, say 95 years old and could tell the difference between red, green, and yellow was good to go, essentially, until that person was 105. And then, again, until they were 115, I mean, truly preposterous. I chose 85 as an age where we'd begin some testing for renewals beyond that age because the statistics were irrefutable that beyond age 85, where the Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that almost half of all Americans have some form of Alzheimer's, for example, in addition to cognitive disabilities, this physical disabilities as a person ages, the studies, particularly one from Carnegie Mellon, suggested that a person beyond 85 was almost four times as likely to be in a fatal accident as a teenager. And yet we've, in many states now, addressed the teenage drivers through forms of graduated licensing restrictions on these teenagers, and we're happy to do that because, frankly, in addition to saving lives, these teenagers don't vote. And we've seen, there was a report came out just last week, nationally, teenage driving deaths have been reduced by a third. Here in Massachusetts, they're down 75% since we've implemented this restrictive licensing. So
Brian Joyce, seniors do vote, as you know. I mean, do you think nationally we're going to deal with this thing in a clear-headed way, or are legislators like you, have trepidation about putting constraints?
Well, it took 3 or 4 years, but eventually we did get a bill passed, and now when a person beyond 75 renews their license, they need to go in person rather than via the mail. Now, that seems like a small step, but it is an important step.
What about the idea that people at any age can be impaired? Health problems, can hit people at any age. So if you're going to do it for seniors, why don't you do it for everyone?
Well, and that's the argument we heard often in an ideal world, I suppose, would all be tested every single day. But we need to make some decisions and cost-benefit analysis and the like. And the statistics are irrefutable that, in common sense, would also tell us as we age, some of our physical and cognitive skills and our ability to drive, frankly, diminishes. Now, the overwhelming majority of persons on the road are safe drivers, including seniors. And, many know enough to self-police, to take themselves off the road and the like. But frankly, there are increasing examples of persons who did not know enough to stop driving, did not recognize that their skills had diminished such that they were no longer safe, and we have, almost on a daily basis in the United States, fatal accidents that perhaps could have been avoided.
Brian Joyce, Massachusetts State Senator, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Great to have you with us. Joseph Coughlin is with me in the studio. We're looking at this issue of older Americans and driving, and we have got, Joe, all kinds of response here online. It's really interesting stuff. Here's Steve in Vermont says, I'm much more concerned with drivers distracted with cell phones, drivers who are drinking than I am with the elders driving. On the other hand, here's Beverly in Iowa says, I know a lady who very recently lost her sight legally. She's legally blind. As much as I've tried to dissuade her, she continues to drive. That doesn't sound good. Here's Richard in Warren, Connecticut, says a few years ago, a man in his 70s was driving in his neighborhood, driving his pickup truck, approaching the center of his small town. He was driving the speed limit, but an impatient 24-year-old behind him, didn't want to go the speed limit, zoomed around. There were fatalities there. Sometimes it works out great. Here's Megan says, my 93-year-old grandmother had her license revoked after several minor accidents. She wasn't a good driver for the last 25 years, but being able to drive gave her the independence to keep her life, meaningful in those later years. So we've got it right across the board.
I think it's one of the things that we pick up on is if you were not a good driver when you're younger, you're not going to improve when you're older. And I think one of the things that we really need to think about listening to the senator there is that across the country, we have a policy failure to think in a systematic fashion. We do not have the testing. We do not know what's old. But more importantly, we don't have an alternative at the other end. Most older adults over age 50 do not live where transit alternatives exist. So until we can come up with a mobility approach, mm-hmm. we don't have a system at all.
You've called it house arrest once those keys
essentially, go. Yeah, you can have your health and you can have your money, but you'll also be staying in your house for a very long time.
Or as we had a Canadian testifying last mm-hmm. week at this NTSB hearing, this was Bonnie Dobbs, University mm-hmm. of Alberta, says, the younger members of the family see that their elders are still going to need to get around, and it's going to be on them. She said they see this crushing wave of responsibility coming at them. When mom or dad give up the keys, you're going to be the chauffeur or guilty.
There's a little secret going on that most people don't like to say, which is people have a vested interest in all of us remaining mobile. So whether it's a spouse who depends on a husband to drive or whether it's an adult child, we're all vested in the mobility of each other.
Here's one more great web comment. My great-grandmother, John writes, drove her car to the grocery store, the hairdresser to church, not to mention the liquor store, now and again. She lived to be 106 and came to my father with her keys one day when she was 99. Fortunately for our family and the community, she was responsible and savvy enough to know when it was time.
And I think that's a piece that we tend to forget. The work that we've done with the Hartford in particular shows that the vast majority of older adults do know when to stop and will have that conversation in a positive way.
Let's go to Tucson, Arizona, and Sandra Rosenblum. She's professor of planning and gerontology at the University of Arizona, expert on the social impacts of aging populations and their travel, their mobility needs. She was also a panelist at the NTSB forum last week. Sandra Rosenblum, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Do you think we're on top of this problem nationally?
No, of course not. Joe is right. We have a failure at all levels. We have a failure to develop techniques that allow us to know when someone is too has cognitive problems serious enough to stop them from driving. We're not on top of the mobility options. In fact, we sort of delude ourselves that there's some kind of systems waiting for people. Quite often, brochures and information to the older people say, well, just give up the keys and your community is just full of transportation options mm-hmm. for you. And that's just that's a lie. It's just another scam against the elderly. There's not enough capacity in any of the existing options to provide mobility for most older drivers. And Joe's right. Families are very worried. And it is a little secret. You hear a lot about older families talking about, oh, how can I get Granny to stop driving? But actually, when you listen, you hear more families going, oh, my God, what am I going to do when Granny stops driving? So it's a real issue.
Let's go to our listeners, Robert in Burlington, Vermont. Robert, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi. Well, this story is in North Dakota in 2003,
mm-hmm.
and I was visiting my parents, and I was with my dad, and we were had a car that we were pulling a trailer. This in North Dakota is also a place where there's no transportation opportunities either in terms of alternative opportunities, and they were living out in the country. The roads are very straight and very flat, and
mm-hmm.
you can see down them
forever,
a couple of miles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, what happened was he was making an improper left. He was in the left lane so that a semi-truck could pass us on the right because we were turning left.
Yeah.
But he misjudged the distance to the corner. He misjudged the distance to the oncoming car that was in the left lane coming toward us.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to persuade him to get back into the right lane, even pull behind the semi-truck.
That must have been a nerve-wracking moment right there.
There was a point where I actually could see the grill of the car that was oncoming to us.
Oh, boy.
And I thought to myself that, well, sometimes people survive head-on collisions.
Oh, gosh. So what happened?
And at the last second or fraction of a second, he pulled the car over to the left shoulder, which would be the same place that oncoming car would go if that car was trying to avoid us.
Mm-hmm.
But the car didn't do that, and the car stayed in the lane and went right between us and the semi-truck.
Wow.
And the next day, that evening, I talked to my sibs, and or one of them anyway, and the next day I called the county sheriff because at that place that was the local police,
mm-hmm.
and made a report, and I was told that what they would do is that they would make him retake the exam.
In other words, you turned your own father in menace to society.
I did.
That must have felt terrible.
Yeah, well, before this, we had reports of him making some other left turns with my mom and you know, where an oncoming vehicle, but I didn't see this directly, anything like this myself.
So what would have helped you here, Robert, you and your dad there in North Dakota?
Well, what would have helped would have been a little bit of different law, but let me tell you, there's more to the story.
Okay.
What they did is they basically trash-canned his driver's license instead. Basically told him, your license is suspended. Put it in an envelope and mail it back in.
They didn't give him a chance to retest or anything?
No. Well, they said that he could retest, but it was the default was your license is hosed. And,
okay.
And it took him 3 weeks to do that. So it's kind of a weird kind of a thing of hurry up and wait because
yeah.
if it was such an emergency to do
right,
that,
right, right.
You'd think that they would have acted earlier.
So what happened?
Well, then he called me, and we had an argument over the phone. I was back in Vermont, and there was this real pain in in his voice, and he told me that I betrayed him, and he was completely right. And it was really hard, and then I hung up on him because I was tired of arguing with him.
Yeah.
And then he talked to my mom and asked her for a nitro tablet, and then he collapsed and died of his fifth heart attack.
Oh, my gosh.
And
oh my Lord.
So, but the thing is if I had done nothing,
mm-hmm.
and then if the worst case would have happened where if due to a judgment failure, he could have caused an accident that killed somebody, let's say a young mother and her baby or something, then I would have known the real meaning of guilt.
Yes. Robert, I appreciate that call so much. It puts so much on the table all at one time. Sandra Rosenblum in Tucson, let me bring it to you. I mean, Robert says he wished there had been better testing here. So it hadn't fallen on him. It could have been done in a more maybe dignified way. What do you make of that story?
Oh, it's all so complicated. Every state has a different way to do it. Many states do have systems, California, Maryland, where you can report an older driver or any driver, and that's the way it should be, any driver who's not driving correctly, and there are formal procedures. But one of the things we see is that in smaller areas, rural areas, licensing examiners tend to know the people. They tend to be more flexible. It's more informal. And in one sense, you say that, well, that's great. You should really know the people that you're taking the license away from or know that someone really can continue to drive. But in fact, it creates this kind of quagmire where you never know if somebody is going to be taken off the road. So as previous speakers have said, there's no system. There's no uniform way of doing it. You don't know that if you call up the county sheriff or you call up the licensing bureau in most states, you don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to send a notice to your aging parent or your aging neighbor? Are they going to tell your aging parent that you were the one that reported them? There's just no system here, and there really needs to be.
Joe Coughlin, what do you make of this story on the roads of North Dakota?
I think the caller framed the pain and the peril of the issue perfectly. But one of the things that we need to think about is that it's about the conversation itself. There's a couple things the caller said that were very important. Mm-hmm. One, they had had previous reports that there were issues with the driver.
Right.
Almost every accident that you can imagine that we see in the newspapers that are somewhere between humor and horror have always had a precursor of events that a family member, a friend, or even a police officer has seen. Rarely do you see an older driver just have an accident right out of the blue and it never happened
before.
Robert
felt like he was witnessing what he feared would be a precursor if he didn't act.
He did what most older drivers say they trust most, someone who is sitting in the seat next to them to see them over a period of time driving. You know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving right now. Mm-hmm. According to Gallup Healthways Index, this is the happiest day of the year. The worst thing any adult child can do is to say, pass the peas and hand over the keys. What we need to have is a conversation about a series of patterned events that say we care about you, we love you, and we're going to plan for alternatives, but the end of driving appears to be near based upon what has happened.
But what he saw disturbed him so much, he acted on it immediately, and
it appears as though it may have helped lead
to his father's demise.
Well, and that part of the problem is not just the guilt that this poor man feels, but also the failure across the United States of not having mobility options for anyone of any age.
Is there a technology answer to this problem? Are we going to have cars we can just get? Everybody's got a lot of people GPS now.
Yep.
You know, will older drivers, after they're done with that time when they're mature and keen and good and all the rest, can just punch in an address and their car will take them there? Is that out there?
I mean, the notion of the autonomous vehicle has been around, believe it or not, since the 1939 World's Fair. So this has been a dream for a while.
Yep.
And the challenge is this. Do you want to buy a vehicle that you don't actually interact with? And maybe some people will, but we don't really teach people how to drive the cars that we have now that are getting increasingly intelligent. So we're going to have to manage an infrastructure where some cars are robotic, some are not, some we trust, some we do not. The future is here. It's just not widely distributed yet.
Meaning there's no tech
bullet. There are some silver bolts coming out. There are collision warning systems and a variety of technologies that end up in the older person's car first because they buy the high tech, the high design, and the high price first.
If they can afford it.
Yeah, and most of the older drivers are the ones who buy the high end, so they get the new technology first.
Well,
the bad news is the dealers and the rest of us don't teach any of us how to use it.
All kinds of response online. Gus writes, my 83-year-old dad needs to stop driving. He hits traffic cones, changes lanes without signaling, doesn't hear horns honking at him. He gave up the keys, but then changed his mind and took them back when his 50-year-old son told him he had the right to keep driving. The son told me he can drive off a cliff if he wants to. Oh, well, we hope not. Here's Heather, says it's a very difficult decision to make, taking away someone's independence, but it needs to happen more than it does. A sweet elderly woman drove her SUV into our house a few years ago. She swore she was stepping on the brake. It was the gas. And here on Facebook from Joanna, please join me in prayer that my elderly parents actually listen to this broadcast. It is a tough situation out there. Jeffrey in Stowe, Vermont. Jeffrey, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think some of the points I want to make have been touched upon, but I would like to sort of highlight my own personal experience. I'm 69. I'm going to be 70 next March.
Mm-hmm. It's the new 40, we're told.
Pardon?
It's the new 40, we're told.
Yes, the new 40. Well, I wish my back would,
agree.
The same.
Right.
I have done a tremendous amount of driving in my lifetime. Being born in England, and I took my driving test, and my father said, now you're going to really learn to drive. And he refused to let me take a car out until I've been driving with him for a year.
Wow. So you really got schooled.
Pardon?
You really got schooled.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, in my professional career, I had to do an awful lot of traveling. First of all, driving all around Europe because I was in marketing, and then subsequently moving to the States in my job, I continued my responsibility doing an awful lot of road travel.
So at 69 going on 70, what do you see out there now, Jeffrey?
Well, what I see is the following. The worst accidents that I have had, and I admit to having had them, were within 10 years of my getting my driving license.
Mm-hmm.
In my later years, I have had hardly any accident of any import. I think the last accident I had was when a deer jumped out in front of the car on my way back to Stowe.
So how should we handle this?
Well, my opinion is that the emphasis is on intellectual ability. I don't see any point in having a road test as a way of assessing an older person's ability to drive. I think
I respect intellectual ability, but what about response times, vision, running over the cones?
Using other forms of equipment, all right? There are virtual booths which have existed for a long time, like you have for pilots in training.
What's wrong with a road test? Pardon me, Jeffrey, I apologize, but what's wrong with a road test?
What's wrong with a road test is that the time that is allocated for the test, the conditions that can be presented, normally a road test is not going to expose the testee to a very dangerous situation. It's going to test their driving ability, I presume, like when you're taking a driving test in the first place.
So maybe look for something more sophisticated, maybe even a kind of a simulation chamber that might put them in different environments. Sandra Rosenblum, Jeffrey, I appreciate your call, but we have so many callers. Sandra, what about road testing? Should it be more regular there?
Road testing is the gold standard, but it's very, very expensive, which is one reason why the whole country of New Zealand has abandoned age-based testing for older drivers because they discovered it was extremely expensive and did not cut the crash rate.
What do they do?
Let me say something. They do the same thing we do, that some states do, that if, in fact, someone is seen to be behaving badly, whether they're 16 or 60 or 105, they can be reported to authorities and those folks are brought in. There's a number of studies that show that it's a very small percentage of older drivers that are bad drivers. And until we get better ways to test people, and we have really bad ways to test people, these tests are just expensive and often are a waste of time. Let me point something else out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happens particularly with women when they're asked to be retested is they never go and get retested. They just give up driving. And we have substantial evidence that a lot of women, older women who give up driving, give it up before they should. They're still able, capable drivers, or they have small problems which could be addressed. An occupational therapist, for example, could help them be a better driver. And yet, they just give up because they're afraid of the tests. So we have to develop a much better way before we – I really have to disagree with the state senator. It doesn't make sense to say any age is the age at which you should be tested until we can develop ways that are really effective at telling whether somebody is a good driver or not. You're taking a lot away from a person, and we really need to be developing better tests. We need to be developing better options. One of the things that predicts whether somebody's going to give up driving or not is marital status and household structure. In other words, if you have another driver in the house, you're more likely to give up driving. But in women's cases, sometimes they're the better driver, yet they give up driving and continue to rely on the older male driver who may not be so good and maybe should not be driving.
The stubborn guy won't give it up. And yet, Joe Coughlin, we don't want to just sit on our hands here for everyone's safety.
Let me share with your listeners a guide that we developed with the Hartford and U.S. Department of Transportation.
The Hartford Insurance Company.
Essentially, it begins with a diagnosis. If you've been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, it's not a matter of if. It's just a matter of when you will be giving up driving. But also getting in the seat next to the driver. What is that pattern? Is it just one mailbox or one bumper? Or do we see a pattern of scrapes and bumps and things that show that driving is no longer possible?
Who's going to report that?
Well,
how do we systematically ensure that we get that information?
That is the challenge. The challenge is that you've got to be with the older driver. Go for a ride with him. Not just call up from a half a country away and say, congratulations, Dad, happy birthday, it's time to give up driving. So once you do that, we have found in our research that overwhelmingly older adults want to hear from someone who cares about them.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely.
Our data are overwhelmingly positive
that 80% of people were willing to hear from someone who cares about them about their driving so long as that person saw them drive. And once they've seen that and seen that pattern, having a conversation where they plan and they show how much they care about how they're going to get around afterwards.
Well, let's go to Charlene, Winchester, Virginia. Charlene, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been sitting here listening to your phone calls. And I just wanted to say that we all get our license at about the same time of age.
Yes.
17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We get our training at about that time, and we're let free to go do what we want all our lives. That's about all we get. I'm a commercial driver, so I have to get trained throughout the year.
Right.
I have to get random drug testings throughout the year. It's not so much the elderly having problems driving. It's all ages. It's alcohol. It's drugs. It's complacency, lack of training and safety. You get it, and that's it. And then you get complacent in what you're doing, and you get bad habits. And I think everybody should have to be treated like a commercial driver. Drug testing.
Yeah.
If you come up dirty, get your license suspended. Pay the fines.
So up the standard right across the board, Charlene. And you see that as somebody who drives commercially. I appreciate that. Let's get one more here. Thank you, Charlene. Lincoln, Nebraska. Luke, you're on the air, Luke.
Hello.
Hi, what do you know, Luke?
Two points to touch on. I'll try to be brief. I don't know how to succeed at that, but I'll try to be brief. First of all, a lot of people have touched on this. Drivers across the board just make terrible mistakes. You have all kinds of anecdotal reports coming in from your Facebook that say, my grandma lived to be, 176, and she drove just fine until the day she died. And you have reports saying 24-year-olds run into me, and they they ruin my bumper. So, basically, people should be tested from 16 on up. I'm a driver, first professional driver myself. I fully believe that. I would submit to more testing personally myself if I could.
What do you see on the road, elderly versus other drivers, in terms of safe driving?
I don't see a difference. It's entirely up to the individual, I think, as to their personal capacity to drive their vehicle. I mean, when you get right down to it, these are blunt force, large objects that we're driving around, and we tend to forget that because we have this false sense of security. And in regard to the cost, I heard somebody mention cost.
Yes.
Of testing everybody constantly. Well, I just wonder what the cost of retesting is versus the cost of a sincere trip to the hospital.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a good point, Luke. I mean, it's interesting. Here's professional drivers calling in saying they want to see everybody tested more. Nashville, Tennessee. Yvonne, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What's your story, Yvonne?
My story is my husband, who is an only child, had noticed that his mother had seemingly lost some of her cognitive skills, and also she'd had a couple of small accidents. And so he tried to take her keys away from her by explaining, and doing it in the very best way that he could. But she could see that she was going to be losing her independence and getting to the grocery store, getting to get her hair done, and going to church. And so anyway, she started to cry. So my husband comes home and relates the story to me. And I said, well, I can understand how she feels. So we're going on a trip over Memorial Day. So when we get back, which was just a few days away, when we get back, we will move her in with us, and we'll take her to all those places that she needs to go.
Right.
Because I can see she really needs to do that. So while we were away, she was in a horrible accident that she caused, and she was killed on Memorial Day.
Mm.
And it's been about 5 years ago.
No.
So sometimes even when a loved one is showing care, and just doing it for the best, maybe you need to be a little tougher.
Be tougher, because you see what can happen if we're not. On the other hand, there's that independence urge out there always. Yvonne, I appreciate that call. One more, then we'll take it to our pros here. Scott in Wakefield, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi. I think it's worth mentioning that you may have difficulty dealing with the entrenched bureaucracy with these matters. My father, who was a consummate driver in his prime, in his 80s and sinking into dementia, became an extremely hazardous driver. I called the New Hampshire Registry asking them if they might want to screen him. Rather than do that, they called him up and told him that his son was trying to have his license taken away.
Oh, geez. Yeah, okay.
And the only good point here was that he was so far into dementia he didn't remember for a very long period of time afterwards.
So you didn't really, it wasn't a helpful path that showed up when you tried to take action, and we've heard that today. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to our guests here. Ellen, Des Moines, Iowa. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My comment today is based on the consequences of these elderly drivers when they get in an accident. I work for a trauma center here in Des Moines, mm-hmm. and when we hear that we have an older patient coming in results of a motor vehicle accident, I'm always dismayed because their recovery times are just terrible. And the consequences for them are much worse with the injuries than mm-hmm. a younger driver would be. And I hope that this would be something that would, you know, help people start that conversation with their parents about driving past their capacity, because they don't realize how devastating it can be to their lives.
You see the physical damage once
a younger patient.
Once they hit the trauma center, they can be in real trouble. Ellen, I appreciate that call as well. Sandra Rosenblum, then here we are. We know it's not easy. What are you recommending?
Following up on the woman who worked in the trauma center. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's happened in this country is pedestrian crash rates have dropped substantially because older people are riding in cars where it's actually safer. So one of the things we're telling older people is get out of the car and walk, where they're far more likely to have very serious falls and crashes. So one of the things we have to do is address all the modes. We can't just tell people get out of your car, because there's not enough resources in most communities to take care of that. So the most important thing is keeping older people driving safely longer. We have to develop all sorts of ways to do that. Then when we put people on other kinds of transportation alternatives, we have to have them. We have to be willing to spend money. If you're worried about the costs of hospitalizing older people, let's try to take some of that money and spend it on creating community options, supporting volunteer systems, spending more money on public transit so that it provides not just for commuter trips, but for the kinds of trips that older people can take. We have to talk about making pedestrian facilities safer. I talk to a lot of older people, and they're terrified of walking, mm-hmm. let alone driving. They're terrified of kids cycling on the and skateboarding on the sidewalks. I mean, we have to take this systematically. Mm. Every single transportation option we have to consider how all of those interact with the frailties and the skill levels, et cetera, of older people.
Joe Coughlin, here comes our future, doubling of the older drivers. What are you?
With the baby boomers aging once every 7 seconds, turning 65, we have a failure of personal planning and public policy. We need to recognize changes in health and our driving patterns and have that conversation. We need to rethink community to make it livable so you can walk.
What do you mean, the actual design of communities?
Where we want to live, as much as the design of communities that have sidewalks and alternatives. Redesign the car, and then finally, we need to reinvent transit to go where we want to be, not where transit thinks it should go.
Redesign the car in what way?
Making it not only safer for a 5'10", 165-pound, 25-year-old design engineer, but for a 75-year-old small woman who sits on top of the wheel.
And if there is no magic wand that's going to produce all of these results as boomers get into older years,
then I predict we have a personal tragedy coming with the baby boomers, where Sandy's own work has shown 70% of them are living in suburban and rural areas, that I see a personal tragedy that is going to turn into a political policy challenge that'll make Social Security look like a trip to the park.
What's the tragedy you're pointing?
The tragedy is the following. I will have done everything I was supposed to do in my young age. Went to school, went to work, raised a family. And now my success will be the icon of my home, living in rural and suburban America, where I have my retirement and I have my health. and I have a very comfortable chair because there's no way for me to get out.
You're just stuck in that
I
house.
I am stuck in, because even if you have your health, that's not everything. You have to get there before you can do anything.
But if you're healthy, you can probably drive.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's one of the challenges we have around transit, is that if you're healthy enough to drive, the likelihood of you needing to take the bus is very low. If you're not healthy enough to drive, using current transit as it is looked at, or as it is delivered today, is not really an alternative. We need
Actually, it's easier to drive than to use public transportation. That's the last thing older people give up, is
right.
driving, because they can't walk a fourth of a mile to a transit stop, even if there is a transit stop a fourth of a mile away, which is unlikely.
With the vast majority of Americans not using transit, no matter how the economy has changed, you don't wake up one day at 85 and say, you know, I think I'll take the bus.
Not as simple as just slamming on the brakes on older drivers, and we hear that from many angles here today. I'm very grateful to you, our guest, for helping us wade into this. Sandra Rosenblum at the University of Arizona, joining us from Tucson. Sandy, thank you very much for being here today.
It was fun. Thanks.
Great to have you. And Joseph Coughlin, director of the MIT Age Lab, thanks for your work and thanks for your insights today.
Thanks for being here.
Listeners, thank you for joining us and for your stories. Good luck in your family. Good luck with your driving. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.